So we're looking at the book of Revelation, and Revelation's a book full of pictures and symbols, a bit like if I showed you the picture of the Eiffel Tower, you'd know I mean Paris. If we had saw the numbers 9/11, you'd know that was a day of terrible tragedy, terrorist tragedy. The Revelation's got all sorts of pictures and images that people reading it in a day would have known straight away what they represented. And today's pictures are beasts, and beasts, both in Greek and Roman and Jewish society, represented evil. If you think of your Greek myths and legends and the Hydra and the Medusa and things like that. And throughout the Bible, beasts represent evil. Do you remember? It's a snake, the beast, that tempts Eve. That's the sort of evil in the garden. And a man called Daniel, who was a great prophet in the Bible, had dreams, visions of beasts representing earthly government. And in today's passage, you see that the beasts represent governments. You'll see that because they've got crowns on their heads. And if you've ever wondered why, when you see pictures of heaven, people sit around playing harps, well, today you'll find out. But you have to listen very carefully. So I'm going to read from Revelation chapter 13. Sounds strange, but it's not as strange as it sounds. The dragon stood on the shore of the sea, and I saw a beast coming out of the sea. It had 10 horns and 7 heads, with 10 crowns on its horns, and on each head a blasphemous name. The beast I saw resembled a leopard, but had feet like those of a bear and a mouth like that of a lion. The dragon gave the beast his power and his throne and great authority. One of the heads of the beast seemed to have had a fatal wound, but the fatal wound had been healed. The whole world was filled with wonder and followed the beast. People worshipped the dragon because he had given authority to the beast, and they also worshipped the beast and asked, "Who is like the beast? Who can wage war against it?" The beast was given a mouth to utter proud words and blasphemies and to exercise its authority for 42 months. It opened its mouth to blaspheme God and to slander his name and his dwelling place and those who live in heaven. It was given power to wage war against God's holy people and to conquer them. And it was given authority over every tribe, people, language and nation. All inhabitants of the earth will worship the beast. All whose names have not been written in the Lamb's Book of Life, the Lamb who was slain from the creation of the world. Whoever has ears, let him hear. If anyone is to go into captivity they will go. If anyone is to be killed with the sword, they will be killed. This calls for patient endurance and faithfulness on the part of God's people. Then I saw a second beast coming out of the earth. It had 2 horns like a lamb, but it spoke like a dragon. It exercised all the authority of the first beast on its behalf and made the earth and its inhabitants worship the first beast, whose fatal wound had been healed. And it performed great signs, even causing fire to come down from heaven to earth in full view of the people. Because of the signs it was given to perform on behalf of the first beast, it deceived the inhabitants of the earth. It ordered them to set up an image in honor of the beast who was wounded by the sword and yet lived. The second beast was given power to give breath to the image of the first beast so that that image could speak and cause all who refused to worship the image to be killed. It also forced all people, great and small, rich and poor, free and slave, to receive a mark on their right hand or on their foreheads, so that they could not buy or sell unless they had the mark, which is a name of the beast or the number of its name. This calls for wisdom. Let the person who has insight calculate the number of the beast, for it is the number of a man. That number is 666. Then I looked, and there before me was a lamb, standing on Mount Zion, and with him the 144,000 who had his name and his father's name written on their foreheads. And I heard a sound from heaven, like the roar of rushing waters, and like a loud peal of thunder. The sound I heard was like that of harpists playing harps. There you go. And they sang a new song before the throne and before the four living creatures and the elders. No one can learn a song except the 144,000 who have been redeemed from the earth. Wow, what is all that about? Well, I'll tell you straight away, we're not going to be those numbers are not the great mystery you often pick up in films. You've seen the films where they spend ages on the numbers. They're actually very simple, and we'll see that. The 144,000, we're not going to talk too much about that. That's 12 times 12, and 12 is the number of tribes of Israel, so it's kind of a perfection. There aren't really going to be 144,000, because in another part of Revelation, it talks about people without number. So it's symbolic. But we're focusing on the beasts. What are they doing there? What is 666 all about? And if you thought Christianity was weird and you've come into church for the first time, you'll now be absolutely convinced that it is. The beasts represent government. Now, why beasts? Well, they're corrupt, those beasts. They're a parody of creation. They're like something of, that God's created, but it's been spoiled. There was one like a leopard, but it had a bear's feet, a mouth like a lion. You'll say, but hang on a moment, there were some strange creatures in heaven. Yeah, but they're heavenly creatures. In heaven, everything's a bit different. But these are earthly creatures that have been corrupted. They're powerful and dangerous. Now, we're into protecting lions and tigers, and rightly so. But in those days, lions and, well, not tigers, because that was in the Far East, but lions and leopards really killed people. If you wandered seriously out of the city at night, your life was in danger. Nobody, by the way, went walking. There was no rambling in those days because you could get killed. So beasts, everyone reading that thinks they're dangerous. And they're appealing. I bet most people quite like that bit in Revelation. If you're into Revelation, you kind of quite like the dragon and the beast. I know some of you have been enjoying reading about that. There's a bit of an appeal to sort of lions and tigers. You know, warriors and kings put badges, don't they, of leopards and lions on their shields. Or you might have a lion's head on your sword pommel. And all those are in contrast to the lamb. The lamb's not very appealing. I mean, which warrior ever had a lamb on his shield or a lamb's head on his sword? Unless you're a Christian later on in the centuries. No one does. The lamb's very gentle. And the lamb's pure and true. So is this saying, if the beasts represent government, that's why they got the crowns on their head. Everyone reading that thinks, oh yeah, the beasts, they represent a government. They got crowns on their heads. Is it saying that government's bad? No, not at all. We know that because Jesus is a king. And he said, we're going to reign with him. So government is ordained by God. It's a good thing. It's his idea. Government at its best protects people. It supports people. It provides security and releases talent. If you've ever watched, if you're old enough like me to watch those old Clint Eastwood films in the Wild West where there's no law, it's the gunslingers who rule, isn't it? It's the powerful and the mean. Where there's no law, the people are very vulnerable. So governments are good. They build hospitals and schools and roads so people can get around. At their best, they equalise opportunity. They provide support for people who may have come from marginalised backgrounds or are held back by illness or disability. We hold our governments to account when they don't do that because we expect that they should do that. They protect natural spaces, don't they? So they try and provide spaces for work and employment, but also nice green spaces. And police provide law and order. So that's government at its best. So why then do the beasts represent government? Well, put simply, the evil power that is behind government, when it becomes ungodly, oppressive, or destructive, it sets itself up against God. And when it does that, it becomes beastly. The reason for the number 666, the reason that's man's number, 7 and 3 are throughout the Bible, they're perfect numbers for God. 666 is 3 attempts to get to perfection and it fails. Man is not God. Man's not perfect. And here, what it's saying is there's a fusion of humanity with evil that seeks to be perfect like God, but is corrupt and oppressive and beastly. And at the time that this was written, the Roman government, while doing many things well, and throughout the Bible, Roman soldiers, by the way, almost universally throughout the Bible are described as good. The Roman centurion has great faith. If you read Paul accounts, the Roman soldiers keep law and order. But Roman government is sometimes seen as venal and corrupt, and Rome could be terrible. So Julius Caesar, on his Gallic campaigns in France, he invaded a whole nation, Julius Caesar, because he had huge debts and he needed to boost his credentials because he wanted to be made emperor. So he invaded a nation. It's estimated 1 million people were enslaved because he would make money selling the slaves, and possibly 1 million people died in battle so that one man could boost his career. Terrible. It could be terrible. In one series of games, 10,000 gladiators fought and 11,000 beasts. And when this was being written, Christians were already being killed. When Nero, Rome is set fire, you may know, and Nero is the emperor, and he blames the Christians. It's recorded by a Roman historian called Tacitus. He blames the Christians for the fire and has them killed. Rome is starting to be beastly. It's much good, but it's also beastly. And God is wanting to say, when governments act in that way, there's more than human ambition going on. There's actually a power behind the throne. And right at the start, if you've got your Bibles open on your phone or something like that, it's not a bad thing when I'm talking or when anyone else is preaching, just have it open on your phone. It's the dragon, right, 13 verse 1, who gives the beasts their authority. And the dragon represents Satan, the evil one. What the Bible is saying is, when government, when cultures, not just government, and ideology becomes oppressive and corrupt and power-seeking and exploitative, it is more than human beings at work. There's a great evil at work. So there's some things to look out for. The beast is anti-Christian. It has a blasphemous name. It's not just atheistic. We don't say to someone who's an atheist in government, ah, the beast. But it's anti-Christian. It's persecuting Christians. It's abusing God. Some of you will come from countries where you were persecuted. Christ is abused. It's exploitative. At best, as we've said, government serves people. But here, if you read carefully, the beast is using people to boost his power. Humans are not in control, even if they think they are. They're serving. They're bowing down. They desire what the beast offers, but they're also in fear of it. They're manipulated and exploited. The beasts don't care for people at all. They want them to do as they're told, and if they don't, it says, consumes them with fire. There's a world system, an economic system, where you have to comply with the beast in order to trade. Christians reading that would have been familiar. If you didn't worship Caesar as God, if you didn't worship the Romans gods, you were out of the system. So it's talking here about receiving a mark. It's symbolic. You don't really get a mark, but it's a symbolic thing. It poses as a divine power. It has a fatal wound, if you read in chapter 13, like Christ being killed on the cross. But it survived, a bit like Christ rising from the dead. It's posing as something like Christ. It can cause fire to come down from heaven. It sets up an image and forces people to worship. And it's dishonest. It lies. It's got two horns like a lamb, but it speaks like a dragon. And it sets itself as an alternative government. Do you remember in the first one we said how wonderful it was when the lamb comes, because every people, every tribe, every language will worship the lamb. The lamb will give them freedom. They'll be united in him. Here, the beast compels every tribe, compels every language, compels every people to worship it, or he will destroy them. So it's a kind of alternative to the lamb on the throne. Now, I can imagine you may have doubts about an evil power. You think, oh, kind of, that's a bit medieval, isn't it? Well, look, what I would say to you is this. you are in the mind. I just invite you to consider things slightly differently. We're in the West, we're beginning to learn that to be a bit less arrogant in our worldview, that other people may have something to offer. You are in the minority, just so that you know, globally, it doesn't mean you're wrong, but you are in the minority if you think that evil is an abstract idea, that it's not there's not an evil personification somewhere. Most people in the world believe there is. That's one thing to take in mind. Historically, if you believe evil is purely a human creation, you'll have great difficulty explaining things like the Holocaust in the Second World War. Historians don't really know, they know that the Germans ordered it, but they don't really know why they did it. Why did they kill 6 million Jews? How did they do it? How did the whole nation get there? It's very, very hard to explain. Likewise in Rwanda in the 90s. How could one group of people so thoroughly hate another that they killed them in such terrible ways? What's going on? If you don't believe in evil outside of humanity, you've got great difficulty explaining what human beings are doing there. So something to consider. Some governments are very beastly. So if you look at Stalinist Russia or Nazi Germany, they're aggressively anti-Christian. There's false worship. You must worship Stalin. You must worship Hitler. They're oppressive. Millions are killed. And they bring oppression wherever they go, whichever country they're in. And in both of them, you have to be part of the system. In Hitler, you had to be a Nazi. In Russia, you had to be part of the Communist Party to get by. So that's when it's really clear. But in other countries, in other times, you might just see hints of the beast. And we'll talk a little bit about that. Maybe just odd things where they're anti-Christian, odd things where they're asking you to worship. And we'll have a look at those in a moment. Now, if you think, Carl, that's a bit beastly. I'm in a government and that looks beastly. Does that mean you shouldn't obey the government? No, it doesn't. Remember, Jesus said, give to Caesar. He's in Rome, and this is talking about Rome. Give to Caesar what is Caesar's. Give to God what is God. And in the Bible, Paul said, again, he's writing about the Roman government of which he is a citizen. The authorities that exist have been established by God. The one in authority is God's servant for good. And prayers, intercession, and thanksgiving be made for all people, for kings and those in authority, that we may live peaceful and quiet lives in all godliness and holiness. So even when government goes bad, we're still called to pray for it. Where it asks us to do things that are not in contradiction to following Jesus, we're to do them. And it's good. We're not a party political church, but we are a political church, and we say it's good to be involved in that arena. And I'm so glad some of you here are involved in party politics. That's a really good thing. We bring salt and light in that way. If no Christians are involved in politics, then there's no light there. Okay, so what is the point of Revelation? So there's a 3B. So I tried to choose ones that weren't too scary. There's a hydra there and a dragon and a liony thing. And then there's the lamb. And the lamb looks really puny. And if you notice, the cry goes up as people look at the big beasts. They say, who is like the beast? Who can wage war against it? When you look at the beast, it looks really powerful. And then John, the writer of this revelation, says, then I looked and I saw a lamb. Who can wage war against the beasts? The little lamb. God is wanting you to know who wins. That's really important. Sarah, when she's running a marathon, if she believes in her head she can run that 26 miles, we all know she can. She'll keep going, even when it's really painful and hard. In the Second World War, as countries were invaded by Germany, people had to decide whether they were going to collaborate with the occupying power or whether they were not. Many, seeing how weak the Allies were, particularly in the first few years of the war, decided they'd collaborate. They couldn't see the Allies winning. Of course, the tide turned. Then the Allies won, and the collaborators found themselves on the wrong side of the line. I'm not condemning them. I can't imagine how hard it would be to make choices like that. But because they didn't know how things were going to work out, because they looked at things as they were now, they gave up hope. But God is saying, look ahead, look at the unappealing lamb. The beasts force people to give themselves up so that the beast can be made greater. The lamb gives itself up so that people can be made greater. It's a totally, totally different system. The unappealing lamb overcomes by courageous love, bold gentleness, and by huge compassion. If you are betting, you know all the betting ads you get on the TV, and the odds were on these three or this one, who'd be getting the best odds? Be the beast, wouldn't it? You probably wouldn't put any money on the lamb. But God says the lamb will triumph. The lamb overcomes the beasts by gentleness, by generous self-sacrificial love, by boldness, by courage and perseverance. So how might that look for us every day? We've taken the bread and wine. Jesus overcomes by giving himself to us. So it might be, for example, the beasts use people. We're going to reject doing that. Such a great temptation, isn't it? You make friends with someone or make a connection because they can help you. Advance your popularity, advance your business, advance your church. Now, there's nothing wrong in connections that are mutually beneficial. But when we're simply using people for our benefit, and then when they stop being a benefit to us, we sort of quietly drop them, that's beastly behaviour. We're going to try not to be boastful. I remember when I was a head teacher, I was always telling people in the school newsletters how well our school was doing and the results. And I had to do a little bit of that. That was slightly mandatory, but I didn't need to do quite as much as I did. And actually, that would put pressure on me. Because the more I told people the results and how they were doing, the more I had to keep doing that. So we're not going to be boastful. When we're involved in government or get close to power, and many Christian organizations do get involved in government with a desire to make a difference, which is good, we're not going to be attracted by the power, but we're going to be moving like Christ to serve in that situation. So I might have, so instead of selfies of me in the Houses of Parliament and things like that, I'm going to use it to serve. So I was in Wokingham Borough Council talking to the head of the council. I didn't know I was meeting the head to talk about the House for the Homeless. Jackie Rance and Catherine Glover, the local Lib Dem councillor, had helped arrange that. And it's really tempting to think, oh great, I'm in. I've made it. Actually, it's an opportunity to serve. And if I start getting attracted to power, when I'm asked to keep following Jesus and I could lose the trappings of power, if I'm attracted by power, I'll lose Jesus to keep the power. But if I'm following Jesus, I'm following the Lamb, sometimes I'll lose the power to keep following the Lamb. Can you see the difference? And then ideology. So you're going to be more discerning about culture and ideology. The second beast represented, you're going to read more about them at home or read while I'm talking, represented false religion, culture, and ideas. And whenever an idea comes forward saying, we are the solution, this is the answer to the human condition, and you and I are forced or encouraged to bow down before it unquestionably, that's something beastly going on. The beast is a corruption of what's good. In most ideologies, most ideas, there'll be something that's good, but it's been corrupted, twisted. And when we're asked to bow down to it, or we're going to lose our job, or be outed on X, or be made a social pariah, that's beastly behaviour. So when capitalism, or communism, or liberal democracy, or trans rights, or LGBTQ+, are promoted as the answer, and we're told to bow down before it without question, or we'll lose our job, lose our status, lose our position, we reject that. We're going to say we're the lambs. We belong to God. He says, come now, let us reason together. We're going to take time to listen and understand, but we're going to take time to debate, and we're going to promote that freedom and opportunity to chat and discuss and reserve the right to disagree politely and sensitively if we think that's the right thing and offer a good alternative. Same goes for making money. We're not slavishly going to stick in the system like the people with 666 marked on them. If that means exploiting the poor or doing something that's unjust or crooked. And sometimes that may mean we lose opportunities. And also, we're not going to be dazzled by the big names. So there's the beast bigging himself up. The lamb's little, the beasts are all big. That can happen in Christian circles as well. I'm going to the HTB Leadership Conference on Monday, which is led by Licky Gumbel, who leads Alpha. And I think he's a lovely man. He's very humble, very gentle. He's always pointing to Jesus. And the great thing about that conference is they'll tell you all the good things that God's doing all around the country, and that kind of lifts you. But the bad thing about it is you can go there thinking, I'm a total failure. My service isn't in the O2 arena. And then we get 50 people, not 5,000. I haven't written a book, and I haven't done a speaking tour. And 50 people didn't become a Christian at the end of the service last week, and I didn't heal anyone. And when we start doing that, maybe that we're listening to a business podcast and we're thinking similar things, or whatever it is, it's your thing. That's the beast. That's a beast. He measures by number and power and size. Who can wage war against a beast? Look how big I am. And this is the interesting and very, very sad thing. That HTB Leadership Conference, I could count four, and I think there's more, of the speakers there, the big name speakers, have all failed really badly in some way recently. So they did their speaking, they were at the top of the tree, great Christian name, and then since that, I don't think it's the HTB Leadership Conference, something's come up and they've, it's a sexual thing, or actually most of them it's a sexual thing, really, abuse in some way. And I think God's saying that, don't be dazzled by the big names, enjoy and celebrate what God's doing. But you know, when we get like that, that's a beast. The beast bigs it up. The lamb is really small in that sense. And we choose for honesty. A friend of mine called Patrick McGilligan was a pastor in Wycliffe. He was working at Peak Freen's biscuit factory in the East End of London in the 50s. And he got a job, and he was a junior clerk, and he was in the office of the boss. And the boss, there was a phone call that Patrick picked up, and the boss did not want to answer it. So he said to Patrick, just tell him I'm not here. And Patrick wouldn't do it. And he just said, no, something, I don't know. I think he said something like, oh, he's not able to speak to you or something like that. He put the phone down. The boss was really cross. He said, I told you to tell him I'm not here. And Patrick said, but you are here. And he said, if I can lie for you, I can lie to you. And the boss said, yeah, that's true. And he had quite a high regard for Patrick after that. So we're going to be honest, even if that costs us. We're going to be generous in our love. There's nothing loving about the beast at all. It doesn't love in any way. It consumes people for its own name's sake. But you and I, because of the Lamb, because his blood lives in us, we're going to give ourselves for the people. It's wonderful seeing the things you do in your workplace, wonderful things you do during the week, for the church, outside of the church. Giving yourself generously, humbly. We're going to be humble. There's a story of a lady called Dorcas in the New Testament, and she dies, and Peter is called to her house. And when Peter gets there, there's all these widows holding up the clothes that she made them. She hadn't written any books or done any big name speaking tours. She just humbly served the Lord. Some of you are like that. You're humbly serving the Lord week in and week out in your workplace, in your family, with your neighbors. Thank you. Well done. You're being like the Lamb. Not publicizing yourself, you're just loving and serving. And we're going to hopefully do miracles for miracles' sake. The beast does miracles. We talked about that last week to show how powerful he is. We're going to pray that God heals and does wonders in people's lives for their sake. That's what we're going to pray for. And we're going to persevere. We're not going to get discouraged. We're told the beast will wage war on the church. We could have a hard time. Have a hard time inside, hard time outside the church. We'll know that God is with us. That's natural. There's people here who know that you come from churches that are having a hard time in the world. but we're going to persevere because our eyes are fixed on the Lamb who was slain. We know that the same Spirit that raised Christ Jesus from the dead now lives in you. So who is like the beast? Who can wage war against it? Then I looked and I saw a lamb. Penguin History of Russia, mainstream history book, said the Russian Baptist Church, tiny, was the only thing in the whole of Stalin's Russia that not only resisted Stalin, but offered an alternative vision to Stalin's Russia. All the politicians had given in, all the industries had given in, all the people had given in. They'd all bowed down to the beast. Mainstream historian, not Christian at all, said it was the only thing that offered an not just resisted him, but offered an alternative vision. And he commends them for doing that. Why? Because they'd read Revelation. They looked and they saw the Lamb. They were surrounded by the beast, but they looked and they saw the Lamb. Do you remember last week? Not by might, nor by power, but by what? Well done. Fantastic. You remember that and nothing else. That's not bad. Then I looked and saw a lamb, not by might, nor by power, but by my Spirit. The same Spirit that raised Christ Jesus from the dead now dwells in you. Thanks.